Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington. Here are the top stories making news across South Sudan, Sudan, and the rest of the region. Some more upstate residents are criticizing the president's move, revoking the new appointment of his former spy chief.
For me, the appointments and the revocation of the appointments brings a lot of lessons. One, what kind of governance do we have as a country?
And a new action plan is unveiled for returning refugees to South Sudan.
Priority areas of intervention focus on creating secure and safe environment for achieving durable solution, providing basic services to support and sustain durable solution.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Many South Sudanese are wondering why President Salva Kiir suddenly changed his mind and revoked the appointment of his former long-serving spy chief, Akol Kurkuk, as the new governor of Warp State. A civil society activist condemns the president's latest move. Dennis Lagagne reports for VOA from Juba.
Just a few hours after touching down at Juba International Airport from the United Arab Emirates on Wednesday, President Kiir revoked Akol Kurkuk's new appointment as governor of Warap State. A resident of Juba town who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of government reprisal says the reversal is a big blow to South Sudanese citizens who want to trust their government.
It's a huge turnaround for politics in the Republic of South Sudan. The most trusted people are being trashed and maybe being put behind bars, you never know. But this is not a new thing. We all know how Malong got away from his position and was also put behind bars for some reasons. So this seems to be a tradition for us as South Sudanese, even during the Bush. So that has always been.
Merica Jelona, Secretary General for South Sudan Democratic Engagement, Monitoring and Observation Program, says recent developments could result in turmoil.
For me, the appointments and the revocation of the appointments brings a lot of lessons. One, what kind of governance do we have as a country? For an appointment to happen, there has to be criteria, there has to be analysis, there has to be a decision arrived at. And we're surprised how that decision is also changed in a very short time, even before the appointed person takes oath of office. For me, one thing I've learned from here is a constitutional lesson. What kind of constitution do we have?
Boboya James is an independent policy and security analyst. James says the alleged friction between the Presidential Tiger Division and National Security Service needs to end, so there is room for reconciliation.
Akokul is back in Juba, and therefore, even if he's not going to get another job for the interest of peace, I think it's good for him to reconcile with the president and continue to help the people of South Sudan to build peace. He has served this country for more than 13 years. His legacy is more visible. He's more highly regarded and respected South Sudanese. So to have that kind of clean legacy from what he has been doing, apart from the bad evil he has been doing, let him ride on the positive part. This country is not ready for another conflict. This country is ready for unity.
Last week, President Kiir removed General Akol Kurkuk from the post of Director General of the Internal Security Bureau, replacing him with General Akech Tong Aleu. General Kuch, a longtime Kiir confidant, was fired while on an overseas mission in the United Arab Emirates. His appointment as Warap State Governor was revoked before he took an oath of office. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logan, reporting from Juba.
The South Sudan government has rolled out an action plan for the return of refugees to the country. South Sudan's vice president for gender and youth cluster says the plan seeks to create a safe environment and dignified return of millions of South Sudanese who are either internally displaced persons or refugees living outside the country. Munyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Speaking at an event in Juba on Thursday, Albino Akol, South Sudan's Minister for Humanitarian Affairs, says the government has developed a step-by-step plan for the safe and dignified return of the South Sudanese refugees and the internally displaced persons to their areas of origin.
Priority areas of intervention focus on creating secure and safe environment for achieving durable solution, providing basic services to support and sustain durable solution, supporting integration of refugees, IDPs, returnees, and improve their livelihoods, strengthening government institutional capacities.
The repatriation of refugees is a key requirement in the 2018 peace before the conduct of free and fair elections in the country. National elections that were to be held in December this year have been postponed to 2026 after the government agreed to extend the transitional period. Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabure, South Sudan's Vice President for Gender and Youth Cluster, says proper planning could see South Sudanese refugees and internally displaced persons return to their home villages.
Since signing the revitalized agreement on the resolutions of the conflict in South Sudan, RSS, in September 2018, the security situation across South Sudan has notably improved, fostering the voluntary return of refugees and IDPs. We talk about them, but they come and they go back before we launched this and we started the work of this, the movement of refugees and IDPs will stop.
Nyandeng says over 2 million South Sudanese are in refugee camps in Sudan, Ethiopia, Uganda, Kenya, and the Democratic Republic of Congo following the 2013 crisis. Mark Aluzio is a South Sudanese refugee at Drasi Refugee Settlement in northern Uganda. He says he wants to see concrete evidence of improved security in his village in eastern Equatoria before he returns to South Sudan.
Because we never know any time thing will change. That is one. Number two, we are forced to hear because of the conflict. But as we talk now, the guns which brought us this fight here are still in the hands of the civilians. How sure are we when we get from here, we are going to stay in our respective places? We expect all those guns supposed to be collected away first before we go to that site.
Aluel, another South Sudanese refugee in Nyumazi Refugee Settlement in Uganda, says there are certain conditions that must be met for returning to South Sudan.
One, to strengthen security, especially in rural areas, so that when refugees return, they will go back to their respective villages. Two, we need basic services and especially social amenities like schools, health centers to be rehabilitated or building back infrastructure that was destroyed during the civil unrest or during the war. Three, we also need programs on refugee or returnees livelihoods so that one will be able to be independent and sustain lives independently. And then four, we need continuous engagement on peace building activities so that we integrate into the community.
Hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese fled to neighboring countries on foot after the outbreak of conflict in 2013. Over 148,000 South Sudanese refugees returned in adverse circumstances in the first 6 months of 2023, mostly fleeing ongoing fighting in Sudan. UNHCR does not facilitate these returns, but says it will keep supporting returnees via pockets of hope, a solutions-oriented, area-based, and a status-blind initiative. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Many eastern Equatoria State residents say they look forward to the resumption of the Juba toward Natapal road construction, which they say could reduce road ambushes, ease transportation, and open up markets for traders, both across South Sudan and in Kenya. Kaltuma Vanessa has the story for VOA from Torit.
The Juba Torit Nadapal road construction is resuming after 3 years of stagnation. It is not clear why work on the road stopped. Samuel Loti, a national member of parliament from Eastern Equatorial State, says he was part of the East Africa Parliamentary Caucus tasked with following up progress on the road construction. He says the first road project was halted because of conflicting interests.
We managed to push it through and met the World Bank, and the project is now on. And as we talk, an environmental impact assessment team that has already finished its work. The current work that is going on now is the consultant that is reviewing the technical design of the road from Nesitu to Nadapal. Then there will be a stakeholders meeting where we legislators from national at the state level plus the community leaders will go and sit with the contractor in Torit and be able now to discuss on the entire technicalities of the project. The World Bank has already contracted a contractor that is going to tarmac this road fully.
Bernard Lokoro Nyimuget, a youth leader and teacher in Budi County, believes corruption and embezzlement of public funds delayed many projects across the country. He says he hopes to see the Juba-Nadapal Road project complete, which he says will benefit residents of Eastern Equatorial State.
Think that they wanted to do something for the community, they should not embezzle. At the end of the day, the project ends like before. So we shall really be very happy to the government if they will start and complete the work. And especially in Budi here, we have been facing a challenge of the road. And now since the road will be passing here, we shall really benefit a lot. Even the communities that people would want to transport to other places, it will now ease.
Torit resident Charles Cipriano Okulu says community leaders in Eastern Equatoria should support the road project. He says this is a second chance for the people of the state to finally get their road built.
When this road construction was started, the community were very happy. Everyone was happy with the hope that it will improve transport, improve security in the area. People, there will be free movement of people, and it cap the issue of road ambushes. And then suddenly it stopped. We thought the impact would be positive to our people, and then with our neighborhood like Kenya, and then it will also ease the transport system, especially our traders who bring their goods from Kenya, it would actually lower down the prices. But it is started, then suddenly stopped.
Jeff Ikachila Longoria is a committee member for roads and bridges in the State Legislative Assembly. He says state and national government should engage stakeholders to support the project.
What they are doing now is landmark survey, which they take recording the landmark that are available, structures of people, those who will be maybe affected by the road, so that the project itself will compensate them on the structure that will be demolished by the construction of the road. This road of Nadapal to South Sudan, it is a long-awaited and expected project, especially by the communities and by the entire country of South Sudan.
The road construction is scheduled to resume in December this year. It will take 3 years to complete. Eastern Equatorial State officials say the World Bank is monitoring progress on the project to ensure accountability. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, VOA has viewed materials that tie the United Arab Emirates with one of the combatants in Sudan's brutal civil war. Find out more when we come back.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. VOA has seen evidence that the United Arab Emirates is supplying military weapons in Sudan's civil war in violation of a United Nations arms embargo. Henry Wilkins has this report.
The Sudanese armed forces say this crate once contained bombs used against them by the paramilitary rapid support forces, the opposing side of Sudan's civil war. It's stamped with the address of the logistics arm of the United Arab Emirates military. Sudan is under a UN arms embargo, but analysts and rights groups say these imported weapons are making the conflict worse. Cameron Hudson is with the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a Washington-based think tank.
If the UAE were to suspend all support to the RSF and were to tell its partners in the region not to support the RSF, I think that this war could be over very soon, quite frankly.
The SAF also showed VOA rocket tubes and burnt-out vehicles they said could only have been supplied by Abu Dhabi. The UAE's foreign ministry tells VOA it is not providing any support or supplies to the rapid support forces or to any of the warring parties in Sudan. But a UN report says there is credible evidence to the contrary. Hudson says the UAE is attempting to gain geopolitical influence in Sudan and the surrounding region.
That the UAE has had this competition with the Saudis in the Horn of Africa for many years. It seems to be doubling down on its investment, not just in Sudan, but in Chad and Ethiopia, in Kenya. So I think the UAE wants to be the kind of great power in the Horn of Africa.
Iran has also violated the same arms embargo by providing drones to the SAF, according to the Dutch non-profit PAX. The Sudanese ruling council has denied this, according to media reports. VOA asked Sudanese finance minister Jibril Ibrahim if the SAF had been receiving support from Iran.
This is the official institution of the country. They can buy arms from anywhere.
The Iranian foreign ministry did not respond to a request for comment. While nations vie for influence in Sudan, civilians are bearing the brunt of the conflict. UN figures show 11 million people displaced and 25 million needing humanitarian assistance. Mariam Mohamed Farah Naim was injured by RSF shelling in early September.
I knew right away that my legs were broken because when they told me to move before the second bombardment, I couldn't. My daughter was hurt as well. She was screaming, screaming and screaming.
A year and a half in, the world's largest displacement crisis shows no signs of letting up. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Omdurman, Sudan.
Vote counting continues today in Mozambique's presidential election. Voters had four candidates to choose from: Daniel Chapo, the ruling Frelimo party leader, Asufo Nomade, who was runner-up in the last presidential election, Lutero Simango, the leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, and Venancio Mondlane, an independent candidate. VOA's Nairobi bureau chief Mariama Diallo has been in Maputo for the election, and a short time ago she spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about the vote counting process.
I spent about maybe 3 to 4 hours at least in one polling station, which had about 3 voting rooms. So, you know, the vote count was being done in all 4 rooms. So you had to pick where you want to be. The one that I was in, for my, I think it was smooth in a sense that they take out, at least for the presidential part, they take out all the votes, they count how many people voted, and then they seal it. Then they reopen it again, and then they go through the, you know, one by one. So for me, it was about 275 people had voted in that particular room. And then they take the votes out one by one and read who's the winner. And they had two other people basically verifying it, and they put it in a pile. But the thing was that because they had 275, and then when they tallied the votes for each of the 4 candidates, then we did the total, it came up to 276. So there was one extra vote somewhere, or because the numbers didn't add up. But I think watching them, they just decided to count every single pile over and over again until at the end we figured out that, you know, the numbers of 275 people who had voted were counted for.
Now, I understand that some of the candidates, the opposition candidates, have expressed certain concerns about the voting process. What are some of their concerns?
Well, I think at one of the polling stations that I visited yesterday, where you had two of the opposition candidates, Lutero Simango, the leader of the Mozambique Democratic Movement, who voted there. Also, Osufo Mamad, the candidate of one of the main opposition parties that came in second in the last presidential election, he also voted there. Felipe Nyusi, also the outgoing president, voted that polling station. For Lutero Simango, though, I think his complaint, he talked to press right after casting his ballot, he talked about the fact that complaining to the Mozambican Electoral Commission, saying that they did not accredit all his all members of his parties to basically be part of the counting process. I think everybody had to kind of, some parties had to be there to see how the counting process was going. But I think his complaint, and I think he's might be a little bit similar to Venancio Mondlane, the independent candidate, who also had some complaints similar. He didn't vote there. He voted somewhere else, but he had those kinds of complaints. For Mondlane, he also talked about the positioning of his, his coalition, but that's more on the parliamentary side, where that they were supposed to be in certain positions, but those numbers changed. But I think, according to the National Electoral Commission, they said that basically that happened because not all parties were competing in all electoral districts. So I think that was their defense. And I think, so those were kind of the complaints, some of the complaints that you could hear. And the National Electoral Commission also talked about the fact that some polling stations did not open on time. In Cabo Delgado, for example, there were some challenges until around 10 a.m.
That was VOA's Mariama Diallo in Maputo speaking with editor Kate Pound Dawson. The National Election Commission has 14 more days to deliver the final count to Mozambique's Constitutional Council. For more on Mozambique's election, check out voaafrica.com, voanews.com, and all our social media. Hurricane Milton left behind widespread destruction as it crossed the southern U.S. state of Florida late Wednesday night as a dangerous Category 3 storm, the second time in 2 weeks the southeastern state was hit by a powerful earthquake, or hurricane, that is. VOA's Richard Green has the latest.
Milton made landfall Wednesday night along Florida's west coast near the city of Sarasota, carrying maximum sustained winds of 205 kilometers an hour. The winds ripped the fabric that covers the roof of Tropicana Stadium, the home of Major League Baseball's Tampa Bay Rays franchise. The hurricane's strong winds and heavy rains triggered high levels of water that flowed from the Gulf Coast into low-lying areas of the cities of Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Fort Myers. Milton also spawned at least two dozen tornadoes that crisscrossed the state well before the hurricane made landfall. Authorities say several people were killed by the tornadoes, including one that struck an upscale community near the city of Fort Pierce. More than 100 homes were destroyed, including that of Fort Myers resident Connor Farron.
This happened like instantaneously. Like, these windows blew out. I was about probably right here when it happened. My cat over there on the desk. I grabbed the two dogs and like run under my bed, but that was it. Probably 1 minute total. Probably less.
Authorities say at least 2 million residents were left without electricity. The National Hurricane Center downgraded Milton to a Category 1 storm early Thursday morning as it made its way across central Florida. Forecasters warned of devastating rains and damaging winds throughout the day before the storm exits into the Atlantic Ocean. Richard Green, VOA News.
Some 3 million homes and businesses have been without power today. Emmanuel Badhaso, who is from Ethiopia, lives in Tampa, a city on the west coast of Florida, and shares his experience.
Since yesterday, Hurricane Milton has caused a little bit of havoc in our area, in our state. When I got out this morning and checked my neighborhood, I see a little damage, shingles, mailboxes, downed trees, electrical poles, and a few other things. Other than that, we haven't seen that much damage, like people in Fort Myers or southern Tampa, Sarasota area, what they've gone through. I see a lot of tree branches that have fallen and plugged the sewer system and the draining system. That's going to be challenging. And other than that, I see people moving around and checking their properties and people driving around. Hopefully, the wind has sustained and it's going to be cooling down. Though we have slight rain for in forecast, we hope that Hurricane Hamilton has survived us. I thought it was a lot of lesson how to prepare, how to weather out this great storm. This is Emmanuel, again from Tampa, Florida, an area called the Wesley Chapel. Thank God everybody's okay in our neighborhood and our community.
Again, that is Ethiopian native Emmanuel Budhasa speaking to us from Florida.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
And that wraps it up for us this Thursday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow miss this broadcast, head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Wenge Mambo by Oliver Mtukudzi. Listening to Wenge Mambo by Oliver Mtukudzi. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam, in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Bill Andrade, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.